Only 4% of women come during hookup sex.
In queer relationships, the orgasm gap is nowhere near as big.
If it's over too quickly, many people will be disappointed.
Because for me, the goal of sex is not an orgasm, interestingly.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Cheeksy Chats, our sexual wellness and awareness podcast with your hosts,
Helen
and Ameza. In today's episodes, we want to delve into the multifaceted dynamics surrounding orgasms, shedding light on its societal dynamics, individual experiences, and the pursuit of sexual fulfillment.
At this point, we would also like to remind everyone that on Cheeks, so getcheeks.com, getcheeks.com, in our Pleasure Academy section, we have a lot of material on orgasms, from how to orgasm, to edging, to squirting, to talking about partners, reconnecting with your body, how to masturbate, how to talk to your partners about your desires, and also how to implement toys into your game and material that you can use for this, films, sexy ones, audio guides, articles, step-by-step tutorials. And we hope you check it out with the code CHEEKSYCHATS, so CHEEXYCHATS. You can test out Cheeks 7 days for free.
You can also find the link and the code that I just mentioned in our description for this episode. Enjoy!
Orgasm, the definition would be the peak of sexual arousal, and it causes intense feelings of pleasure. It is when the body releases sexual tension and pressure, and it involves very intense feelings in your genitals and throughout your body. It usually only lasts a few seconds, but can have several positive effects on your overall health.
So there's both physical and mental benefits, and some of the physical benefits are that you have lower stress levels because of all of the positive hormones floating around. You have a better sleep. You can also relieve, for instance, menstrual cramps and headaches. So little tip there. And it increases your immunity against things, actually. And mental benefits are that you kind of have a better focus, you're in a better mood, and you tend to also have better self-esteem. And it can also be kind of a bonding experience, because after the orgasm happens, the oxytocin hormone is coming out of you, and then this leads to better bonding, but also perhaps not always long-lasting bonding. Perhaps in the moments after, you're like, "Ah, yeah, great," and then eventually you're like, yeah, okay, maybe this also wasn't the person for me, but it helps you to have a better, well-rounded experience.
It can also lead to realization.
Yeah, after. But yeah, in the moment you're like, wow, best thing ever.
But one of the great things is also that it's not just from orgasms that happen during sex. You can also have these benefits if you're masturbating. So you don't need a plus one to get these benefits necessarily.
And technically, everyone can orgasm. Some people might find it more difficult, but I think there is a sexual dysfunction called anorgasmia. That means a person has difficulty or cannot orgasm, even if they are enjoying sex and it feels good to them. But this is not the norm. So a lot of people might struggle at first with reaching an orgasm, especially if you have a vulva, because it's narrated as something that's more difficult to kind of work with. But that's kind of a very patriarchal way of seeing things and making the anatomy of people with vulvas more mysterious or difficult, which it is not. But what it does take is practice and kind of exploring your body and figuring out what feels good for you, because it is quite individual. If, for instance, circular motions feel good, or rubbing, and the degree of pressure you have to put on certain places, it is a big task, I would say, for everyone in life to discover themselves, and with that also find out how they enjoy to orgasm.
Totally. And I think it's so interesting how mystified the female orgasm still is, And it's in a way based on our history, like for a long time in Western medicine and science, female sexuality in general has been seen as like this derivative of male sexuality in a way, or like this light version, or like this lesser or reduced version. Like, let's say cis women function just as cis men sexually, just like a bit more relaxed, I guess. And basically, if a man does his thing, the women would be pleasured in just the same way.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with kind of this biological aspect where it's like the man has to orgasm, or this man has to orgasm, the penis owner has to orgasm for there to be the possibility of creating a child, and the person with vulva or uterus doesn't. And I think this is a reason, and also this sort of sexuality focused on masculinity, where you have to be, the masculine version is penetrating and having the orgasm and being dominant and strong, and the feminine role being the passive receiver and not necessarily enjoying it. And I think that this is the way it has been shown for a very, very long time, which is also why sexuality of people who are brought up as female or socialized as female is sort of always put on a back burner instead of it being out there and as present. Especially also, I think, at a young age, because I remember even in school, it was like very clear that people who identified as male were masturbating and watching porn and talking about it. And in my school, none of the girls were like, yeah, I also masturbate.
Yeah, it's super normalized that for boys or men, that's even like a rite of passage almost. And for women or girls, it would be much more taboo or like unusual. I mean, there's still like labels like slut and stigmas of that. And I think also, as you said, in the way that we raise girls, it's weird if you're like sexual or if you're even interested in that too much. And I think it begins at a very young age, like to touch genitals is dirty. And I think that even has more impact on girls, or like how that is like communicated to girls. It's much more heavy-handed, I would say.
I also remember I was, I think, 18, 17, and I had masturbated a bit, but not properly, I guess. Or, I mean, what is proper, but not in the best possible way for my body, because I didn't have anyone really to talk to about it, and I didn't know if it was normal. And I remember there was a friend group that I wasn't super close with, but some of the people I got closer to, and they openly talked about it and kind of what they were doing and their lust and their want for pleasure and how they're orgasming. And I remember my mind was blown, because I was like, oh, this is normal. I can do this. And it started off my journey.
And this was also a group of like girls and women.
Yeah, queer, very queer, a lot of girls. And it was, very liberating kind of to take this step, and very fun. And I think that this is really a big part to orgasming, is really knowing your body. And if your whole life has been people telling you that your body is only there for sexual encounters with someone else, or to please someone else, or generally just body shamed and mystifying your orgasm, it is super challenging to kind of hop on and be like, no. And I really hope for everyone around and the next generation, masturbate when you want. If you want to explore your body, do it. Find your orgasm. Enjoy it.
Totally. And there's even stuff like the masturbation gap, where you can clearly see that most women, or like, I think it's 1 in 4 women masturbate, which is like half the rate of men. And much of that is linked to patriarchy. So, for instance, sex therapist Jacqueline Helia says that through patriarchal society, there's still a strong message that female sexuality only exists to pleasure men. And if you're on your own, there's no need to do anything. And women still don't think of their own genitals for their own pleasure. They just come like into action if there's a man in the room, or it's very functional. Like even in like sex education, female sexuality is often just like reproductive means.
Yeah, for me, it's interesting because I have like very diverse people or groupings around me where some groups are super open and sex positive. And also even when younger or I get into contact with younger people, they are exploring themselves. They fight for their orgasm. They will not take anything else. And then I also have friends that, for instance, feel that their pleasure is linked with someone else and that they don't want to masturbate or that they're scared that they won't be as sensitive to sexual encounters anymore if they're like using the toys. And I think that's interesting because it has this super ingrained concept of it is only there with someone else, or I can only be pleased if there is someone else, which already puts you in a position where you're always waiting or hoping for someone else that can please you. And while I agree that sexual encounters with someone else can be wonderful, I also wouldn't say at all that masturbating or doing it on your own time takes anything from that.
Totally. And I think it's valid to think that if you're like sexually pleased or like your sex life is, let's, for lack of a better term, say good enough, you don't want to masturbate. But sentiments like using toys or masturbation makes it less sensitive almost seem like ancient or puritanical, like these myths that were like, oh my God, don't masturbate. You're going to have these crazy repercussions if you do, and you're going to be like this basically muscular vagina that doesn't feel anything anymore. Yeah. And I mean, there has been these myths about male masturbation as well, but for female masturbation, it seemed much more long-lasting.
Yeah, I also think that knowing your body better can only help when you're with a partner, because then you can show them what feels good for you and you have a better understanding, and you can, of course, always explore together and find things out together. Because maybe there's also parts that they can reach better or touch better. But I think that it does for sure help if you know what you want. And I also notice it for me and my sexuality, how it has gotten more pleasurable over the years ever since beginning this discovery. But I do find this concept also interesting for penis owners, that is like, if I do it too much on my own, I won't enjoy it with someone else. Because I think fantasies can be fun and helpful, but also don't take away from human connection necessarily.
Yeah, totally. And you're not exclusively drawn to that then. Like, you can still be multifaceted and enjoy a couple things. And I think what I really found interesting from hearing from you was like that masturbation or exploring your body can help so much just knowing your own preferences in the end, because if you don't find out about that, you sort of give that responsibility to the other person, which is super hard if they don't know what you like, if you don't know what you like, to just like poke around and potentially never find out. And I think that's a big contributor to like this orgasm gap. The orgasm gap is basically the scientific finding, or like the finding across multiple studies, that when cis men and cis women have sex, that men orgasm way more frequently and women usually don't.
Isn't there some crazy statistic with like on one night stands or first dates?
Yes.
How much is it?
According to Dr. Laurie Mintz, only 4% of women come during hookup sex. Like just 4% of women.
Yeah. I think the orgasm gap has this underlying concept in heterosexual relationships. It's a lot bigger also.
Yeah. For instance, the same studies with bisexual women also showed that they orgasm just much more frequently with other women during hookups. And I wondered, like, why? And I think a lot of that probably relates to how we think about sex. That I think oftentimes people are like, penetrative, like penis into vagina is sex. The rest is just foreplay. Blowjobs don't count. Fingering doesn't count. Like eating out, all of that is just side dish, basically. And I think it shows how much like sex can be about ego or like, not lack of empathy, but like, yeah.
That mm-hmm. sex is about game. Yeah.
Sex is about empathy and essentially how uncentered female sexuality is oftentimes.
I also noticed this because it does take, I mean, different amounts of time for people, but it usually does take some time to stimulate the clitoris, and it is not in this usual script of mm-hmm. having penetrative sex. And so I often have this where I'm like, am I taking too much time? Is it too much focus on me? Is this okay? Am I allowed to do this? Because, yeah, if you are taught your whole life, you are there to please. And then there's been made space for you and you're like, oh, I don't want to take up too much space. Ah. And I think it's normal because it's changing. You are changing your perception of what is allowed and what is okay after being told your whole life that this is not what you should be doing. But I find it super freeing, and I really encourage everyone who is insecure or asking themselves if they can take this much time and if it's okay that they take a while to be stimulated and to come to an orgasm. Yes, it is. Take your time. Allow yourself to come. You should be coming with partners. And if you want, if this is a goal you have, if it is something you wish for, then it is important for you and your partners to communicate about it and to make sure that you both are reaching this if it is a goal of your sexual encounter.
Totally. I think it's really learning about how to take up space and stand up for yourself in a way. There have been even studies led by Julie Richters at the University of New South Wales, which surveyed over 20,000 individuals. And those findings highlighted that women oftentimes are raised as people pleasers and then often prioritize the sexual pleasure of the other partner, like usually the men instead of their own. And this totally sheds light on the societal dynamics that we have and how we raise women to just like sidetrack their own pleasure or like even their own desires.
And I think it is super telling then, because when the vulva and clitoris are sold as being something difficult to deal with, telling that, for instance, in queer relationships, the orgasm gap is nowhere near as big.
Nowhere near.
So it clearly is not an anatomical problem. It is really a societally ingrained problem on who gets to receive pleasure, who gets to have the time for it, how can you communicate, how free do you feel to communicate?
Yeah, and I think what's also interesting about it, that it's not me defending men, I don't want to do that, but in ways that where women like fake orgasms, which of course it's again linked to like this pleasure of their partner or don't wanting to be like, not wanting to be complicated or weird about it, but it literally like tells your partner the wrong things. Like then the man is like, oh yeah, I'm doing it right, whatever. And just leads to more confusion and sex can end up more of a like act of service for the woman in that scenario instead of like this connection or like this fun activity for the both of them.
Faking orgasms, for one, yes, kind of sends the wrong message instead of talking to each other and kind of finding a way to help each other orgasm. You are faking it. On the other hand, I think it is normal if you, or it is completely fine if you're not there yet where you're ready to take your space to fake it. And also, sometimes you might feel insecure if it's just not working and then you stress yourself because you really want it to work because your partner is really trying and you are really trying, but you're stressed and it's just not happening. And there I also, I understand, because
totally.
The more you stretch, the less likely it is. And then it's all trying and it's like, okay, I will fake this now. But also then I find it interesting because you still have this sense of guilt that you are not functional and you are not working.
Yeah.
So I understand why it happens or why females do this, and sometimes also cis men. But I think generally for a more liberated sexuality as a society in the future, I would say that not faking an orgasm does open up a conversation. And also bodies aren't capitalist machines. They don't always have to function. You don't have to orgasm.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think when researching that was also, or like even talking to friends, I think was super interesting to find out that, of course, not for everyone, the orgasm, or like especially the male orgasm, is this like scope of sex. Like I have same-sex friends, lesbian couples who have been petting, eating each other out for like 45 minutes. No one comes. Nobody necessarily wanted to, but they're like, oh yeah, but there was a fun session. We had fun, and there's not this pressure of like, oh shit, I have to perform. I have to get to that point of orgasm. Because just like you said, with many women, if they go through the motions or like test everything out and it's still not happening, there can be this frustration and confusion, like what's wrong with me? I'm unhealthy, or I'm doing the wrong steps. Yeah.
I think it's also a matter of how the sexual encounter is structured, because if I sleep with women, I find that the goal is to be intimate and to be with each other and be sensual or less sensual in certain situations with each other, but to kind of share this experience. And I've had different experiences with males where sometimes the sex is really just about reaching the orgasm, which is also understandable. Like, we have talked about the benefits of orgasms and they feel great. It's okay, you know, like totally get it. But also a lot of it is then the male comes and it's over.
It's over.
And this is what is so interesting to me, because I'm like, okay, good for you, but the sexual encounter wouldn't have to be over. And I think there it would also, for me, change kind of something. Because for me, the goal of sex is not an orgasm, interestingly. It isn't, but I think for me it's also a bit different because I do struggle a lot with it, especially with partners. And I think this is another thing that a lot of people who present as females and or flinters, as it's called in the German area, so females, lesbians, intersex people, non-binary people, trans people, and asexual people, have experienced sexual abuse at some point in their life. And that also makes it more challenging oftentimes to reconnect with your body, to trust partners, and to let loose in the way your pelvic muscles would have to let loose, and you would have to breathe to accomplish an orgasm with partners. So for me, I am not at the stage past it where I would say it is a goal. I usually don't come with partners, but I'm not stressed about it, because as soon as I stress about it or think I have to do this or it's not good sex, if it's not an orgasm, then I would never have sex again. And I think a lot of reconnecting with your sexuality after it has happened is to kind of go step by step and to trust different processes and different touches again. And it does stress me a lot when people like ask after you sleep with someone, and did you come, as if it's like the measurement for good sex. Because for me, it's like, hey, hopefully one day it will be the measurement, but right now it's not.
I think in a way it's the measurement of the partner's ego sometimes, like, oh, I made her come, I performed, which, as you said, it's not like the making you come is not the prerequisite for like a good time.
Yeah.
But sex is also, and like orgasming is also linked to so much more than just like doing the right steps, performance. It's like body image, if you trust the person, how you feel in the moment. I think oftentimes people want the step-by-step guide from best from strangers, not even finding out themselves. And it's so hard, or like impossible basically, to give that to them.
Also in friend groups, when you meet someone new or have sex with someone for the first time, a lot of people are like, hey, how was it? Mm. Was it good? And I always find it interesting because a lot of people are then like, yeah, I came like 5 times. And I'm like, okay, it's super interesting how big of a role the orgasm plays, because as I said, orgasms are great and I fully understand it. And I hope to one day accomplish this on a regular with partners, but it also puts a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
If everyone's always talking about it and you're like, okay, because you do think something is wrong with you. You're like, even with people you trust or have done it for a while, it's not necessarily that it happens. And then you're like, I just want to be normal. I want this experience to be gone. I can't manage this. And it's so stressful that then for me, for a while, I just stopped sleeping with people because I was like, it's never going to happen. I'm not normal. I can't do this. I can't restart this journey for myself. That's why I would really like to point out that sex cannot only be good with orgasms. Orgasms are great extra. It's nice for your body. It's very fun, of course, but for me, it was always like, also this orgasm gap narrative. Everyone's always like, yeah, the orgasm gap is so big. And I'm like, and I can't close it like as much as I wish I could. Currently, if I sleep with men, I am not necessarily capable of closing it. And the question for me then was like, does it have to be closed at all costs? And for me right now, I'm like, no, it doesn't. If I manage to orgasm, that's great. But if not, it doesn't make the sex worse for me currently.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point, because desire, preferences, whatever you search in sex is so different for everyone. I think we oftentimes want to have this like solution which works for everyone, but like every one of us is different, everybody is different. And it's nonsensical to expect that like I find this guide and then I'm going to make her come instantly and then I can come and then it's over finally. I think in that sense, it's also for some people when they know their rules, it can still be like, okay, but it's so complicated and maybe not worth it today. I don't want to stress my partner out. And it can be fine to be like, okay, but not today. Like we don't have to do this like ritual to get me there.
Exactly. I think it's like a two-sided coin. I think if you want it, claim it. Mm. And if it's not that important to you or because of trauma, you're not quite there yet, it's also okay. And you can get there. It probably will just take time. And you also don't have to. You can still have fulfilling and fun sexual experiences without it coming to the orgasm. Yeah. And because I also think, for instance, all of the toys and stuff are also sold to make you come a lot of the time. And it's like, okay, I really need to learn how to do it now. Is my body ready to kind of get on this journey? And I need some help or something or other. And I think it's interesting to know this about yourself. If you're like, ah, okay, for instance, this touch doesn't work so well for me, but this toy really gets me going, to also talk to your partners and incorporate that, but also to realize that nothing is wrong with you and you don't necessarily have to buy products to fix yourselves. The products that you buy should be there to enhance pleasure or to experiment or to find out new things, but not necessarily to fix you and your body and the orgasm gap and your ability to orgasm with yourself or with partners.
Yes, you're not broken. And I think toys are so interesting in that sense, because oftentimes for friends of mine, it's been like the learning curve, almost like finding out that, okay, maybe penetrative sex is not the way although it has been portrayed in media as such, like always, or like almost as a given that it should happen there. But if you don't, then maybe it's on you. And I think what I've heard is that many women don't even know what an orgasm would feel like. So it's also lots of insecurity about that, when in fact just 15% of women can come through like vaginal sex. It's mostly like the most reliable way is clitoral stimulation. But even with toys, there are scenarios where, like, for instance, the man gets it done and then the woman want to come as well and get their toy out. And then for the man, it's like, but that sort of scratches my ego, or why can't I take care of that? In some cases where they even want to try, there are some scenarios where the man is like sort of offended or like feels less than because he isn't the person who provides that sexual stimulation or like this final step to the orgasm.
Yeah, and for that, I would really like to send out a loving message to all men, because you do not have to perform always. It is completely okay to use toys. They don't mean that you are not good enough. They just mean they have a certain form of stimulation that really sets something off and can be like a fun extra.
You're not vibrating. To the meal.
Yeah, it's okay that you're not vibrating. You don't have to be vibrating. It's fine. Please.
Totally. Yeah, and even you can even join. Like, you can use the toy and the person.
Yeah.
And what I also really enjoyed while researching was in another podcast about the orgasm gap, someone used the metaphor of like, when I'm at the water park with you, like if we're going to tropical island or pool parties again, if I say afterwards, like, oh, I wouldn't say like I had so much fun on the slides in the water. It would be like, I had fun with you there. I wouldn't exclude you from that. It would be still about our shared experience with that. And it could be nice to like sort of shift that perception in the use of sex toys.
Fully, especially because I think that it's a big perception also in heterosexual relationships, because in queer relationships, I feel like people are much more open because it is framed much more as a discovery, less as penetration coming over, but more as a discovery of each other's bodies and as an intimate experience. And that can also be fun, especially obviously also if you have the same genitals, if you can use it both or on each other. And I think that's also where people who are in relationships with someone who has the same genitalia as themselves, interesting, because you kind of understand more how it feels to touch it and where it feels good. And I think toys can then, for heterosexual couples, also be an interesting way to explore each other's anatomy and to test out what feels good as a part of the fun exploration, like a toolbox, kind of.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, your fingers are one sense of touch and the vibrator is another sense of touch, and thinking of it as, yeah, a fun toolbox of experiences rather than something you have to use to help because you're not good enough is super important. And also what I've learned to be a big factor in orgasming in queer situations.
Yeah. I think that's so interesting. Like with, for instance, couples, like same-sex couples that share genitalia, that it's, for one, sharing the same genitalia. So of course, you know a bit more about that. But I think also in many ways how queer relationships or queer people relate to one another, I could imagine that there's a more empathetic approach to sex. And in cis straight relationships, it's thus even more important to like communicate, like, he doesn't have a vagina, so maybe she can tell him about it, or he can even ask about like what she likes. I think that was something super interesting that I saw from Chantal Heidi. I probably fuck up the name, but she's like a human relations and communications expert. And she wrote this book, No More Assholes, about dating. And one thing that was super interesting was that many people are sort of ashamed of asking like, or like telling their partner how to do certain things, because it sort of ruins the moment or like is a bit awkward maybe. And the way she approached it was super nice because she said, like, she, for instance, if you're kissing and it's super moist and you don't like moist kisses, she may break the kiss after the while, but not the intimacy. And it's just like, okay, now let me show you how I like it, which doesn't need to like disrupt this intimate moment, but still can lead to the way where both of you are on the same thing.
Yeah, on the same page. I think for sure, because also this communication process can be worked into kind of a consent process, yeah, where you kind of talk about at the beginning, how do you like to be touched or show me, which also can be super arousing to like, yeah, watch someone show you how they like to be touched and then doing it and them being excited about it. So I think in heterosexual couples, there's of course a lot of societal standards of what cis men and cis women should be like, and communication is not necessarily one of them. Mm. But especially, yeah, because they have differing anatomies, it is important to talk about it. And the key to making each other orgasm, I think, is then to show each other what feels good and what you need and what your desires are, from kissing to touches, or I don't know, because everyone's super specific. Some people don't like being petted or touched in certain, yeah, places, or something throws you off. Or for instance, tongue kisses for me, I just,
oh,
don't like them.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Hello. Thanks for communicating that.
Yeah, just in case. Yeah, but I think the expectation that someone just will know how to touch your body and what type of kisses you like or what type of positions or toys you like is something that is told to you, that is the romantic way to do it. But I would like to reconfigure this and tell you, really, it is much more romantic if someone genuinely cares and wants you to feel good and wants to talk about your boundaries and your wishes and your desires and wants to try them out with you. And I think there's nothing sexier than that.
Totally. And that's also something that Heide said in her book, that you can either make it about stroking each other's egos, like with keeping up this performance, or you can have a good experience. And this experience can actually be much more long lasting, because with each experience, you find out more what you like and how you can apply that.
And I think this also super well leads into this concept of pressure of lasting long and coming too quick, because this is very much a performance thing, right? You feel like you have to last longer, especially in as a male or cis male or as a person with penis, you feel like you have to last long, because if you don't, it's embarrassing. There's so much TV show, yeah, footage of them being like the first time, oh no, they came too quickly, or generally this being a very shameful concept or topic. And I, yeah, would really like to, we talked about this recently, that for instance, for us, it's like if the person takes a long, long, long time, especially if it's penetrative sex, and they, because sometimes I look at them and I notice that they're stressed and they're, yeah, like really concentrating to not come. And I'm like, just release.
Yeah, thinking
if you're
of
stressed,
the,
please.
You're thinking of the most like horrendous things just to not be that aroused anymore and not to come. Because in a way, I get it, of course, right? If it's over too quickly, many people will be disappointed. But in a way, it's also the thing that we just talked about. Like, if you came, it doesn't need to be the end of it. Like, the male orgasm doesn't need to be the whole horizon of sex. It can go on. You can still engage with your partner. I know from some men that they know that afterwards they came, they're not really in the mood anymore. So they like to like take care of the other person first and then engage of their own stuff. So there are even strategies that you can develop. But in the case that some guys are like withholding the orgasm, I think that's such a weird approach of how to, because it is an approach of making it more pleasurable for the other person, but it's totally like targeting the wrong spot. Like,
yeah,
making it longer won't make it more pleasurable.
It saddens me. It really does, because I'm just they're like, I wish you weren't performing for me. I wish you would talk to me, or especially if it's penetrative and they're just like doing their thing. And I'm like, yo, we could also just do something else. I don't want this to be stressful for you. I would love it if it were fun. Please feel free to come. And I find it super interesting because when you sleep with women and they come, or if you sleep with vulva owners and they come, you just continue. And at some point you're like, okay, cuddling and kind of chilling out and are both like over it. But several orgasms may happen.
Yeah, or you can go again.
A bunch of things may happen. And I think this is a big thing with the orgasm, tackling the script and not seeing it as the goal necessarily. Maybe it's something you want to achieve and you then claim it for sure, but it doesn't have to be the pinnacle of the sexual encounter. It can continue, it can happen again, you can drag it out, it can happen super quickly and you still continue to kiss and do other things.
Yeah, it's weird, like now that you put it that way, it's almost like this three-act structures in a movie, like where you have the climax, but instead of like the end, it's just over. Like at the climax, it's like boom.
Maybe some aftercare roll if credits. You're having a good night. Yeah, but it's like, okay, bye.
I think it's like sex is interaction. And as oftentimes with interaction, we're not really interacting, we're not communicating. It's just the script or this performance that we do, maybe because we think it's awkward. And maybe it is awkward, but is it that bad? Like if you have this one awkward moment, it's maybe even better than 45 minutes of just awkward humping, not knowing what the other one is thinking or actually
especially
wanting.
A lot of the time when I'm like, just finish, you know?
Yes.
I've also recently had this in sex therapy where we drew kind of like a curve, and it was the one, oh my God, math, the y-axis and the x-axis. And the y-axis was kind of like, where I'm at. So this is happening during the sexual encounter. This is happening, I don't know, let's for instance say there's some elements of like oral sex and or kissing, oral sex, penetration, more oral sex, da da da, and somewhere in there there's an orgasm, and I had to draw out the level of turned on I am based also on how much time has passed during the curve, just from like memory, how aroused I am. And I noticed that for me, for instance, penetration really quickly makes my arousal go down after a time. So if it only takes a couple of minutes for the person to come, that's perfect for me, because after a while of penetration, I'm like, yep, okay. Yeah.
Especially if it's just like this monotonous thing, right?
Yeah, especially if there's no position changing or something, because then it's a different sense and it can be fun. But I think, yeah, for me, it's like, okay, if the other things take a lot of time and you come back to penetration, but you hop around, that's nice. But sometimes with penetration, I'm also just like, okay.
Next one.
I'm done now. Like, this was super nice, but you can finish. It's okay. You can be, you can come and then we can do other things and all will be well. And then sometimes I'm a bit like frustrated, or I also ask like, hey, or I also offer, it's also, I always feel a bit weird about it, to be like, yo, you know, if you feel like you could orgasm, feel free to, you don't have to perform. But I also don't want to, I would really urge people to, of course, always communicate throughout sex, but also at the beginning of sex. Because, for instance, I didn't realize that I had this particular curve. And now that I know, it's much easier for me to be like, hey, by the way, penetration, we don't have to do it very long for it to be fun for me, unless it's something that's fun for you. And there, I think you always have to find middle grounds, because different things are arousing for different people, and to kind of figure out together what your script is for ideal sex.
Totally. And this is also another point again, like some people may like if you're like pound for 45 minutes straight and doggy, and then there's ways on how to communicate that, or even develop maybe strategies on how you're not have to be like holding it in the whole time. But some people do not, and it's important to be on the same page about that.
Because I also think there you can use toys, right? You don't always have to penetrate yourself. And this is what I find very fun about dildos generally. It's a very fun invention for sure, because I do enjoy penetration. I just don't enjoy it forever.
Yeah. I think I've been in the past sometimes even rude about it, or like not rude, but very straightforward, that at some point I'm just like, hey, okay, let's wrap it up. Mm-hmm. Are you finished? I need to go.
With people I know well, sometimes I'm also like, yeah, okay, please, let's go.
Yeah, because if you're noticing the other person straining, it's also not enjoyable, maybe.
Yeah.
At least for me, because then it's like, okay, but I don't want you to be like, oh, I'm trying to. It's just awkward. Mm-hmm. This is the awkward moment that I try to avoid.
Yeah. Which, yeah, is avoided if we all communicate better, question our roles a bit more, gender roles that we are told, step away from them a bit, and try to be honest and open about what arouses us and what makes us orgasm, or if we wish to orgasm, because it might also be crazy important to some people that that is the only way to have a good sexual experience because of the great bodily reaction. Mm. And that's also fine, as well as if orgasms aren't the centerpiece of the interaction you're looking for. I think, yeah.
Yeah.
To realize that sex is an individual script that you have with yourself that's always expanding and something to explore.
And changing.
Yeah. And with every single partnership or hookup or whatever that you're having, that's the same thing. To always rediscover it. It, of course, helps if you kind of have your own script down, because then you have a better idea when someone asks you what you like. Because for a long time, this was hell for me. People were like, what do you want? And I was like, oh my God.
What do I want?
How do I make you come? I don't know. You probably cannot due to trauma. And it's really not your fault, but I don't know what to tell you now.
Yeah.
So I really do think a vital step and a first step is connecting with your own body.
Totally. And I think, as you said, like this honesty is, it's important that it's both ways, because this, like, faking orgasms, it might be okay from time to time, but in the long run, it's good to know where you're at. And even if this communication, maybe if we find out, okay, I like this, you don't at all. This may sound very clinical or like too logical, whatever, but it's good to be like, okay, but then maybe we're not compatible in that way. And if we don't find a middle ground, it's best to maybe just part ways here.
Yeah, or to attempt to kind of find a middle ground. Because I think for a lot of things, there is one. But of course, if you find yourself pushing your boundaries or unsatisfied, then it is tricky.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so thank you for listening to us today. Today we discussed the orgasm and the benefits it has, both physically and mentally. We also talked a lot about the underlying reasons for the orgasm gap, and talked a lot about what an orgasm means in sexual encounters, what part of your sexual script is it. We talked about the importance of connecting with your own body to reach an orgasm, but also to understand that you either can claim the orgasm if it's important for you, or that if you're due to trauma or other reasons not broken and nothing is wrong with you, you can still have enjoyable sex without reaching an orgasm. And that by changing the script around sex, a lot of performances and pressures around the orgasm can be released, and it can be a more fun experience and better orgasms, probably, even if you're not stressed.
Totally. Yeah, with pressure and worry, that is basically the opposite of pleasure. And when we're full of inhibitions, orgasms don't happen. It can help to communicate more and to generally focus less on the male experience and sex and view it more as a partner experience or group activity, if you like. To conclude, we have this very nice quote from Dr. Nan Weiss, which is, when we focus on how much pleasure our bodies can give us, we can learn to associate being in our bodies with pleasure.
And with that, we thank you for listening and see you soon.
See you soon on the next episode of Cheeksy Chats.
Bye.
Bye.